And welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome you to today's very special annual episode where we will be talking about the Holiday Gift Guide for 2011. I have an announcement to make. I want to talk some more about the TotalCon contest, and then I want to give an update on the Daybreak at Hingman's Creek scenario that will be run at TotalCon 2012. So I want to begin by welcoming all of you, of course. I am very happy that you're here with us today, listening to the show. The last episode, episode 64, by my recall, has done very well in the less than, it's been 2.5 weeks that I've recorded it at this point. So in the 2.5 weeks, I have had it downloaded 77 times, so there's 77 of you out there who seem to be enjoying the show, and thank you for spending your time with us. So, the episode had done pretty good, and this episode, since we're nearing Thanksgiving, this is actually Thanksgiving week that I'm recording this, since we're nearing Thanksgiving, we're going to be getting into Black Friday, which means the shopping season for the holidays is here upon us, and like every holiday season, I put together a holiday gift guide. Been doing this for a while now. There was a small hiatus in between, but brought it back last year. The holiday gift guide basically is my attempt to make life easier for you and your loved ones, buying toys and games and all that kind of stuff for gamers is not always easy, especially if you're not a gamer. Chances are, if you're listening to this, you are a gamer, but you know, this could give you maybe some sort of ideas and some things that you could pass on to loved ones, family, and friends who might be purchasing gifts for you. Or maybe you have to buy something for another gamer out there and you're just not really sure what to get. So I try to put together this gift guide and I end up taking a bunch of different items. They go into three different categories. Things that are $15 or less, things that are $50 or less, and things that are $100 and above. So I have all of them, and they go into different categories, and they're in no real particular order, but every holiday gift card, there's one particular item that kind of stands out heads and shoulders above all the others. Last year, it was Zombie Dice. It was the number one overall pick for the holiday gift guide. I got to tell you, this year, it was close, but Zombie Dice is not the number one pick anymore. Something else beat it out. I'm sure you can guess what it is, but when we get to it, I will let you know. So, starting off with the holiday gift guide, as I said, we have three categories, and the first one is under $15. So, the five items here in this category are Zombie Dice, which is a fantastic game. I've talked about Zombie Dice so much. It's just, it's really, really good. I think I've turned a lot of people on to it through here on the podcast, talk about it on the blog, and just, you know, in person, really. It's a quick and easy game, something that you can pick up very quickly. I was taught this by a six-year-old she's amazing, amazing little girl, and I mean, she beat me, but the game is so much fun. You roll six, well, there's a bunch of different colored dice in this canister. You can't see what you're taking out, but you take out three dice and you roll them. The dice have zombie brains on them, they have a blast marker on it, and they have feet icons on it. And you are the zombie. And actually, they wouldn't have zombie brains. They have human brains, I'm sorry. But you are the zombie, and so you want to get 13 brains. And if you get a brain, it means you captured a human, and you eat their brain, and it was delicious, and you want more. If you see feet icon, that means, whoa, the humans are too quick for you. They escaped. And if you happen to see a blast icon, that means, well, you got a shotgun to the face, and you need to go over again. If you get three shotgun blasts in one turn, then you lose all the brains you captured in that turn, and then the next time you go, you can try to get some more. You can bank brains, and like I said, the goal is to get to 13 or more brains so that you win. You can play with at least one other person, so two people minimum to play. I mean, you can play by yourself, I guess, if you want to do some solo wargaming, but at least one other person, and you can play with as many people as you want. So you can play with 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people, 50 people, 5 billion people. You could play with however many friends and family and coworkers you can rope into playing this game with you. It was a huge hit at Gen Con, and it's just a lot of fun, and it's also incredibly cheap. I believe it sells for $13.13, and the reason why I recall that is It's just a really weird number, and I've seen it pop up. So that's something you can get at your friendly local game store or online. I'm sure Amazon and different places, eBay and so forth, has it. Another item you might want to look into are some collectible card or collectible mini boosters. These tend to go anywhere from like $7 to $9 for collectible card games and $14.99, I believe, for minis. So things like World of Warcraft and, of course, Magic the Gathering, a huge Wurtz has a new set that just came out. So that would be something that you could look at. Wurtz, as you know, is a thing that I really love. I love World of Warcraft too, actually, but those are different things. And you never really know what you're going to get in the booster, but there's, you know, certain metrics, and it depends on the game, but usually you're guaranteed some sort of rare and certain number of uncommons and a certain number of commons. That would be the rest. And you get the cool little models or cards or whatever, and you can play your games with them and everything. It's just, it's a cool thing. People who are really into this are going to love it. And, I mean, it's just, it's fun. You just get it, and, like, you don't know what you're going to get, but you know you're going to get something usually pretty cool. So that's another recommended purchase. Also, you know, maybe you get some models at home, or the person you're buying for has models, and they're looking for ways to spruce them up. So, like, they're painted and they put on a base, but the base is just plastic or metal or whatever, and it's kind of barren. You might want to add a little bit of life by adding some grass tufts. Now, the Army Painter makes what they call battlefield tufts, and they come in, I think, 6mm sizes. I have some Highland Tuff ones, there's Swamp ones, and there are other ones. They sell for $6.99. And these are basically, think like static grass, but like a bunch of static grass clumped together. You don't need to worry about it sticking straight up because they made it this way. It looks just like it's perfect. You just pull it off. You can use tweezers or whatever, a little bit of PVA glue. You put it on the base. You hold it, let it dry, and you're golden. And you get tons of this stuff on here. It's fantastic. Another brand you might want to look for is called Silflor, S-I-L-F-L-O-R. You do a search online, I'm sure you will find that. It's the same price, but I believe the strip that they come on is a little thinner, but a little bit longer. And I don't actually have the dimensions, but I think you end up probably getting a little bit more of it online, but not terribly so. So when you factor in shipping, it might not be worth the best thing. But you can definitely find the Army Painter Tufts in your friendly local game store. I find mine at The Wiz here in Westboro on Route 9 East, but I believe Battleground Games and Hobbies down in Abington and in Plainville carries them. If they don't have them there or at your local game store, then please ask your hobbyist there, and I'm sure they'll be able to special order them for you. So those are a great deal. Now, this keeps on appearing on the list all the time, and, you know, there's a good reason for it. The next thing is dice. In particular, I really like Chessex 16mm D6, and those are the smaller D6, but you really can never have enough D6, and Chessex makes like a gazillion different sets of dice, and different color combinations, and some have like metallic flecks in them, and some are, you know, solid colors or whatever, and the, you know, the fancier looking they are, the more they cost, but you can get some like really cheap, and you can get some that are a little bit more, but most of them are under the $15 price point, and if you get a box, it's like this clear plastic container of the 16mm D6. I believe you get something like, I'm just doing some quick math, I think you get something like, oh, at least a dozen, maybe 18 dice in there for the price you pay. And you can use these for just about any kind of game. If you're doing mini gaming, you're going to most likely be using D6 for it, even if you're playing like an RPG, like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, or using Pathfinder rules, or whatever, you're probably going to need dice. I mean, those are probably D20 systems that you'd be using, but a D6 comes in handy for stuff. Plus, you can use it to play Farkle, aka 10,000, which is a lot of fun. All you need is a set of dice, so that's just really cool. And, you know, if you're a true gamer and you just don't want to ever make a decision in your life, as we saw on an episode of The Big Bang Theory, you can just roll a dice and let it tell you what to do. You can get these, again, online vendors, but please try your friendly local game store first. They have them there and be able to support the local institutions that you love and hopefully play at. Finally, I really love Games Workshop's Citadel line of paints. In particular, their metallic paints are some of the best ones I've ever seen. They have, you know, inks, and they have just primers and like all sorts of stuff, but the metallic paint is fantastic. They have them in different shades and different colors to meet your different needs. They're reasonably priced. I think they're actually under $5 or $6, I think, for a thing of paint. And last year a while, and you should be able to get it. I'm done with it, unless you're doing something like Necrons or whatever, or something with a lot of metal in it. Otherwise, you should be okay. So just about any kind of paint would be great from them. I like all their paints. I use them. But, I mean, there are other paint companies, Vallejo, for example, and Reaper or whatnot. And Privateer Press has their own line, of course, too. But the GW Metallics are our favorite. And, you know, say you got a grab you're doing like a Yankee Swap or something, and price them, it's $15. Get a few things of paint. Do it with your friend. And, I mean, you can't go wrong. Again, friendly local game stores or online vendors, places like the World Store and so forth, you can find that. And I think in the UK, there's a place called like Wayfair Games, which is also an online vendor. But try your local game stores. The next category is under $50. And as you would guess, these are a little higher in price. They're a little bit bigger gifts. They're probably not something you're going to go ahead and do for, you know, just a small gift kind of thing, because they're a little bit bigger. But they're maybe a little bit cooler. The first one in this category is actually the number one overall pick for the gift guide. It is the Black Powder Rulebook. This is put out by the wonderful folks at Warlord Games. And this you can find just about anywhere. I think it retails for about $45 American. You can get this at your friendly local game store. You can get it from BarnesandNoble.com. Architects of Warrior, I believe, does the U.S. distribution for Warlord Games, but you can also get it from warlordgames.co.uk, I believe it is. And, you know, you can find it just about anywhere. If you do a search online, like say in Barnes & Noble or Amazon, and you just type in the words black powder, I can assure you, you're not going to find it right away. So you're going to want some extra information about this, because books, you need a little bit something extra to track things down. So, of course, Black Powder, it's by Rick Priestley, P-R-I-E-S-T-L-E-Y, and Jervis, J-E-R-V-I-S, Johnson. And if you put those in as an author, that will help you. But another thing that might help you is the ISBN number. And as you know, the ISBN is basically like an address for a book. It's unique. No two books in the world have the same ISBN, or at least they're not supposed to. So the ISBN for this book, the ISBN that I have, is 978-0956-358103. And if you put that into, you know, Amazon or Barnes & Noble, which is my favorite, or, you know, any other place that you buy books online, you should be able to find it that way. But like I said, for the local game stores, Barnes & Noble, Architects of War, those are some places you could track this down. Now, if you're playing any miniature kind of game, chances are you have models, or you'll need them, but you don't want the models to just play on the floor. Because, well, that's kind of boring, isn't it? I mean, you want it to kind of look cooler. And one way to make it look a little cooler, look a little more realistic, would be to have some terrain. JR Miniatures makes all sorts of fantastic pre-painted, pre-assembled terrain. You can get it for just about any scale. They have stuff for 15mm, they get stuff for 28mm, 25mm predominantly for historicals, but 28mm as well. They're low prices. You can get them online. Warstore.com has it. Your friendly local game store should. I think Hobby Bunker up in Malden carries a decent line. And of course, if you go into a con or whatever, you'll probably be able to find these at a con. So they just get it all, whether you want historicals, you want fantasy, you want, you know, futuristic sci-fi, you want modern or whatever. They have something for just about everything. And it's a lot cheaper than if you were to go and get something elsewhere. Like Architects of War, for example, fantastic terrain pieces. I love them. They're really like a work of art, but they're so expensive. And maybe you like the stuff put up by Battlefront, because they just got a lot of cool terrain that they come out with buildings, and they came out with that fort recently. Again, pricey. So if you want to put something cool on the table so you can play at, but you also want to put most of your money into your actual models and your army that you're playing with, you don't need to break the bank to get terrain. Check out JR Miniatures. You can get some really cool stuff at some very good prices. So now that you get some terrain on the table, of course, you need to put models on there too, because what are you going to do? You can't be fighting a battle without some models on the table. And I got to say that the Perry brothers have a fantastic organization going on over at Perry-Miniatures.com. They do all sorts of historical models. In particular, I love the American War of Independence, which are all metallic. They're 28mm. They're really, really good, well-crafted. I mean, the Perrys are doing this. They're amazing sculptors. They know what they're doing, and they have a strong interest in history. But also, they have the American Civil War and Napoleonic lines that are coming out. Both of those are coming out in plastic kits, so you can get a lot more for a lot lower price. You can spend, oh, I think they're under 20 or 25 bucks, I believe, for a kit. And you get something like 20 to 30 guys in one of those plastic kits. You can get those, again, online, either perry-miniatures.com or the War Store. Your friendly local game store should be able to get them. But I gotta say, the ones near me have not or are not able to get Perrys. I've asked. But the Perrys are great. These are really like the Rolls-Royce, the Cadillac of models. They're, I would call them relatively affordable. Some people consider them a little bit more pricey, but I mean, that's why they're under here, under the $50 limit. You could probably get a decent size army for this price, unless you're doing Napoleonics, because I mean, you need a lot more stuff there. But they're really cool, and there's other miniature companies out there, depending on the scale you want and everything, but Perrys are pretty cool for 28mm. I love them. I'm doing my American War of Independence army in that, and I adore the Perrys. They're fantastic, great customer service, good prices, fantastic models. You can't go wrong. Now, the fourth one on here is really cool. It's another product I actually have that I love, and it's a Battle Games Magazine digital subscription. This comes out, and I get it as it's a color magazine. I get it as a digital subscription in PDF format. I can read it on my iPad. I can read it on the computer. I believe it works on color e-readers like the Nook Color, and I can't the Kindle Fire, I think, is the Amazon version of a color e-reader, and there's like other, you know, tablet computers and so forth. So it should work on all of those. The pages are crisp. It's fantastic rendering. Articles are amazing. Henry Hyde, who is the editor over there, but not the owner for much longer because they've been bought out, is just, he does a great job, and he's going to stay at the helm, you know, doing things creatively, and it's going to continue. It's going to be a great magazine. So there's good things coming ahead with that. I would recommend getting a digital subscription to it now. And, you know, he gives you an email, says, hey, download it, and you're good as gold. It's a fantastic magazine, and I can't wait to re-up my subscription. It's a reasonable price, so you can get it. And, you know, this is a good thing, too, that you can get for people. Maybe you're not geographically close to them. And, you know, if you get something like Terrain or even a book or whatever, you got to ship it, and shipping's another cost involved, and money's tight everywhere. Whereas something like this that's digital, it is what it is. You don't need to worry about being like, oh, let me box this up and get down to the post office or FedEx or UPS or whatever, or schedule a pickup or something. You just got it, and it's delivered for you. It goes and shows up in the inbox, and it's all good to go. So it's amazing, and the magazine is superb. So I got to highly recommend Battle Games Magazine, a digital subscription for that. Now, finally, in this category, I want to close things up with the under $50 with a board game, Pandemic, and the expansion, actually. But Pandemic is a fantastic board game. I've talked about it here on the show before. And basically, Pandemic, you and the people you're playing with are playing together against the game, which is really cool. And in it, you work for, I believe, the CDC based in Atlanta, and you're trying to rid the world of disease. And there are different colored diseases, red, black, yellow, and blue. You could pretend they're things like Ebola or, you know, SARS or whatever, but they're not given any sort of name. They're just these colors. And you need to find the cures for all of them. And once you find all four cures, you won the game. But there are so many ways that you can lose the game. It's still a lot of fun. You work together. Each person has a different at-random role that lets you do different things. Like maybe it's easier for you to cure one of the diseases. Maybe it's easier for you to share cards that you have that are resources with another player. Maybe you can move people around the board more quickly. Or maybe you can actually get rid of the disease cubes on the board more quickly. If you do that, you're the medic, for example. So you got to find out what all your different roles are, and you got to work together and try to cure what's on the board. But as you play, more disease cubes go on the board. The disease is spread into other cities. And you have to contain things. There's special cards in here that let you do really cool things, like, you know, build a research center. And a research center, sorry, is where you turn in your cards to say, hey, I cured one of the diseases. So they're really cool, and they also help you move around a little easier. Or there are bad things that happen. As you're drawing cards that go into your hand, you might pull an epidemic card, which causes really bad things to happen. And depending on your level of difficulty, depends on the level of cards that you have in there. So it's a cool game, and I think it's about $35, $37 or so. And there's an expansion for it, which I have not played, but it looks equally cool. It's put out by Z-Man Games, I believe. Great board game. You can get it at your friendly local game store, online vendors, and be sure to check it out on BoardGameGeek.com for more pictures and reviews and everything, so you can get a better idea about it. Now, we're moving into our $100 and up category, and this is like, ooh, big bucks. So, here, I gotta say this, it's weird, actually. The others all have five items in it, and they don't have to, but they do. This one only has four. So the first one in here is a Saga Army deal. And Saga is a new rule set that's put out by Gripping Beast. And Gripping Beast makes those fantastic Viking models that you might have seen either in WS&S or in War Games Illustrated, or Battle Games Magazine has talked about Saga. I mean, just like all of them have talked about it at some point. It's online. You can find it everywhere. But Saga is really cool because it's a skirmish Dark Ages game, where it kind of combines some of the things with, like, say, collectible, models, in that you don't really know what your models are going to do for abilities. You know what models you're getting because what you see is what you get. But in order for them to do anything in the game, you have to roll your dice. And the dice have different symbols on them, and the different symbols correspond to abilities, which you can see on, like, this chart. And maybe the dice you rolled lets you activate a unit of pikemen or a unit of Viking berserkers or whatever. It might give them special bonuses for things or cause harm to your opponent. So the dice do all sorts of really cool things. You don't need a lot of stuff because it's a skirmish game. At most, you need 20, 25 models, 30 at the extreme. Right now, they have the Normans, they have the Anglo-Danish, they have the Saxons, and the Vikings, that I believe I cover them all. They all have their own special dice with their own icons, like the Vikings, for example, have Viking runes on them, which is really cool. Now, if you get one of these special army deals, you get it with the rulebook, you get it with the dice for your faction, and you get the Starter Warband. You can get this from GrippingBeast.com. According to their website, they are sold out. But I hope they're going to get them back in stock because the holidays are coming around the corner. I know GrippingBeast.com does have them, or at least they're listed on the website. And you should be able to get them from places like the War Store. And I'm not sure if the local game stores have them, but please check there. And check with Neil at the War Store, too, to double check. Or you can email GrippingBeast directly at grippingbeast@btconnect.com. And they'll give you more information there. I'm very excited about Saga. I have not played it, don't have anything yet, but my friend Drew really enjoyed the Black Powder games that he has played. But Black Powder, not really the era he's into. He's a Viking, is really what he is. He's like a modern Viking. So he wants something like that, but you know, like Hail Caesar, it's a little larger, and he doesn't have the funds for that. So I showed him some stuff about Saga and some articles I saw. I believe it was in War Games Illustrated and in Battle Games. And he liked it enough that he wanted to give it a try. So after the new year, when he gets some, you know, holiday money, I know he's going to go ahead and purchase some stuff. And as soon as he does, I'm going to do likewise. I believe some of the other guys that I had a game with, Court, and I believe Adrian as well, had talked about maybe getting some items. And we'll see how things go. But it looks like a lot of fun for not a lot of money. It's something easy to get into. And you're thinking, well, not a lot of money. You have it in your $100 and up category. And I mean, that's true. But when you're talking about a rule book, you're talking about custom dice, you're talking about a whole starter warband for, you know, like $100 and up, that's not bad considering what people spend for armies. I mean, if you play 40K or see people who play 40K, look at them and see how much they spend to have a reasonable army to play with. They need like 2K or whatever of points, and I bet you they spent a lot more money to get the stuff. Next on the list would be an e-reader or a tablet computer. I love the iPad. I love the Barnes & Noble Nook Color. And the new Barnes & Noble Easy Reader, I think they call it, is going to be on sale for $99, I think it is now. It was up at $139 at one point, but I think they're dropping the price, or they may have already dropped the price. Now, this was on the gift guide last year, and as I said last year, I'm saying it again, it is the easiest way to carry digital formats of source books, FAQs, rules, updates, and, you know, just whatever sort of light reading you happen to be doing. I like to use the iPad to, you know, look up rules. I blog on it. I share pictures on it. All that kind of stuff. And you can do that, too. You can get these things either from Apple. You can get them online. You can get them from Best Buy, Barnes & Noble, Target. I mean, just about anywhere you go. Amazon and so forth, you can get them just about anywhere. And, I mean, it's a really good deal. The price for an iPad is a little high. There's a new iPad 2 out. And, I mean, e-readers, you can get one of Amazon's Kindles for, I think it's $79. It's now $99 or going to be $99 for the black and white e-ink Nook. Or you can get color ones that are, you know, more whatever. It depends on your price point that you're willing to spend, but you can get them anywhere about there, and they serve a good need. Also, you might want to consider maybe some sort of gaming console. I'm a big fan of the Xbox 360, and you can also purchase the Kinect to go with it. It allows you to use your body as a controller. So that maybe if you're a gamer, you might not be getting all the exercise you need to. I know I don't. So you could be getting exercise by playing games. If you want to go skiing, you're going to ski. If you want to run, you need to run. And I bet you that would be a really good thing for you, for your body, for your health. And you'd have a lot of fun at it because you'd be playing a game. So consider something like that. Or, you know, you could get a different game system. There's the PS3 out now. You can get the Wii. Or you can get one of the handhelds. There's all sorts of those for just about any type of game you want to play. Of course, you can get those just about anywhere. I don't really need to tell you, but places like Toys R Us, Best Buy, Amazon, Target, Walmart, etc. have just about all of those. And then finally, and I can't recommend this enough, I've never done it, but I've always wanted to, a professional paint job. Prices vary for this. It depends on all sorts of different criteria that you or the gamer would be setting. But having it professionally painted would be fantastic. And you might want to check out Blue Table Painting as an example. They do a lot of work for people, and they have, you know, YouTube videos up and everything, so you can clearly see what they do. And they're probably one of the more reasonable places out there to get stuff painted. So I would highlight them as a possibility. That wraps up things for our 2011 holiday gift guide. I hope you found this useful, and we're going to keep on doing the gift guides for as long as it holds interest with me and with you. So I hope that maybe something here piqued your interest, and maybe it'll make your life a little easier, or the lives of your friends and family and so forth a little easier in buying things for you or buying things for the other gamers in your life. Holiday gift guide covers all sorts of different toys for the gamers in your life, but maybe I have missed something that you think is fantastic that would make a perfect gift for another gamer. If I have, please send me an email at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, or post it on a blog or on Facebook, or, you know, send me a note on Twitter or whatever, and just tell me what it is that you really enjoy that maybe I have missed. And who knows, it could show up in a future holiday gift guide, or maybe just be talked about here on the blog and on the podcast. So keep your ideas coming. At this point, I want to make a few announcements. First off, I have really exciting news for those of you who may also listen to WWPD, which is What Would Patton Do? News from the Front. The head honcho over there, Stephen McLaughlin, and his wife Lydia are the proud new parents. They gave birth to a brand new baby girl, Isabel. So I want to say congratulations to Stephen and to Lydia. And I want to say a big hello and welcome to the world out here to baby Isabel. I saw some pictures online and she is adorable. I know Stephen and Lydia are very excited about this, and I'm really happy for them. So I hope you are too. If you have any words of happiness and joy that you want to submit to them, head on over to wwpd.net, and I'm sure you can leave a comment on the blog over there for Steven, or they have a Facebook page, and they're also on Twitter as well, so you can send a note to them either way, and it's fantastic. The birth of a child is always a wonderful thing, and having a new potential gamer being born is even more exciting. So congratulations, Stephen and Lydia, and hello, baby Isabel. Another announcement, which is exciting but nowhere near as exciting as the birth of a baby, is that I can tell you that Wargames Soldiers and Strategy magazine can now be purchased at Barnes & Noble bookstores. If you go to a local physical Barnes & Noble bookstore and you head over to the magazine section and you want to go to the craft and hobby section, you will be able to find WS&S. And I can tell you that for certainty because I recently went to my local Barnes & Noble. I was curious whether or not, you know, this was actually there because over on the Facebook page, Yes for Ortiz had mentioned that WS&S would now be available through local bookstores such as Barnes & Noble. And I said, wow, this is really cool. I wonder when they'll actually start showing up. And I wonder, you know, if they'll actually be there or if I'll have to, like, special order them or what people will have to do. So I went. I took a peek. I saw. I feel like I'm about to make a Julius Caesar joke or something here. But anyway, I went to Barnes & Noble. I did a little digging around, and I found WS&S. It's fantastic. It retails for about $9 American. And if you know, maybe you want to either just get a physical format, maybe you have a subscription to the digital, or maybe you have heard me talking about it here on this podcast and saw some discussion on the blog, and thought, that sounds cool, but I'm not quite ready for a subscription, and I want to, you know, get my hands on something and see what I can actually think about it, just head over to your local Barnes & Noble or other bookstores. I'm sure other booksellers have them or would be happy to get it for you, and just take a peek, pick it up, look at it, flip through, and see if you like it. The issue I saw had a lot of content for the American Civil War, which is experiencing its big anniversary this year, so you might enjoy it, and just head over to Barnes & Noble and see if you can get a copy of WS&S. Now, I have to remind all of you about our Total Con contest. Now, we've been talking about this for a few weeks, and I gotta say, I am kind of disappointed in the feedback from all of you about this. Namely because I haven't gotten the response that I would hope I'd get. I'm offering free tickets to TotalCon. It's a fantastic gaming convention in southeastern Massachusetts. It's worth going to no matter where you are. I think it's wonderful, but especially if you're in New England, and especially if you're in Massachusetts. These are free passes. There's no strings attached. There's one pass that gets you in. It's free registration for the entire weekend. And then I have three passes that are free registration for a single day. All you have to do, and no strings attached, no hidden little, you know, small print or anything. All you got to do is send me an email, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Tell me what your favorite American Civil War game is. It can be board games, video games, anything, card games, whatever. Just tell me what it is and tell me why you like it, why it's your favorite. That's all you got to do. Right now, like I said, the feedback is really disappointing, but I know that if you do participate in this contest, that you have a strong likelihood of winning one of these prizes because nobody else has been submitting anything. So please, if you are interested or you know someone who would be, take the time, send me an email. You could win one of these passes. These things are amazing. They have some significant value to it. And you might be thinking, well, you know, I want a pass. I'm thinking of going. But, like, I don't really know how to use them. And you haven't really been talking about it. And you would be right. Now, how this goes, we can do it a few different ways. I've been speaking to Angela Haru, who is the media director for TotalCon, because I had some questions myself about how these would get redeemed. And she said there's a few ways that you can redeem them. So if you are a lucky winner, you can either enter the special code from the pass that I have here, and then you can use that and you'll get the payment covered when you go in order online. So if you want to pre-register, which I would highly recommend, or register and you just want to do it online, you go ahead, you enter the special code, and you're all set. Or you go the day of that you go and you bring the pass with you, and I will, you know, give you the pass physically, mail it to you or whatever. You go in person, you go to the registration booth and say, hey, cool, I got my free weekend registration pass that I got because you guys were kind enough to donate them to the guys over at CWF Gamecast/WargamingRecon, and I want to get signed up. They will take that, and it covers your registration. Or maybe you want to go ahead and pre-register online, but then you go there, you bring the pass in person, and they'll work things out for you. The only things this does not cover are any event tickets. So let's say that you won one of these passes, and then you want to go and you want to play in the Daybreak at Hangman's Creek game that I am running with Adrian B and Court N, and you want to play in that, you'd have to just pay the cost for the event tickets for that, and that's it. The registration pass would cover you. It's a fantastic value. You can't lose. All you got to do is just take a few moments, send me that email, tell me what game you like, what American Civil War game you like, and why it is your favorite, and then you could win one of these passes. And like I said, turnout is low, so that means you have a higher possibility of winning. Now, how could you enter? Email me. You can tweet your submission to me on Twitter. Use @CWFGameCast. You could go ahead and post a submission on the Facebook page, or you could post a comment on the blog. I gotta say that either emailing me or commenting on the blog post that talks about the contents would be the best way to go about it, but however you want to do it will work. Deadline for this is December 31st. So go ahead, send your email, tell me your favorite American Civil War game, say why it's your favorite. You don't have to make it long, a few lines, whatever. And then you could win one of these and just get your submissions in by the deadline, December 31st, 2011. So do that. And if you get one of these, I assure you, you will go. It'll be worth your while to go and attend TotalCon. I have to give a big thank you to the people over at TotalCon for donating these. And I've got to say thank you, Angela. And I got to say thank you, Stephen. Both of you have been fantastic. And speaking of TotalCon, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about and give a little plug, actually a big plug, for the event that I'm running with Adrian B and Court N. We are running a game of Daybreak, and it is Daybreak at Hangman's Creek. It is using the Black Powder rule set. It is an American Civil War scenario, 15mm scale, the Union versus the Rebels. It's found in the back of the Black Powder rulebook, but I gotta tell you, we made a few changes. We've been playtesting this for week after week after week, and you know, part of it's just to iron out things and make sure we're comfortable with it. And part of it is we love playing Black Powder. We love playing together. So we have had a lot of fun working on this and think you will as well. And we'll be running this event at TotalCon that Saturday, 3 o'clock, I believe. It'll take a few hours to play this, and we think you're going to have a blast. It'll be our first time running an event at a convention, if all goes well, and we hope it will. I'm sure we might want to run events again at future conventions. And if it doesn't go well and you are playing in the event, I ask you to bear with us, take pity on us, and we'll do our best to make it a fun and exciting event for you to play in. So, Daybreak at Hangman's Creek, what's this all about? I've been talking about this and, well, numerous podcast episodes before this. I feel like every other word coming out of my mouth is either TotalCon or Daybreak at Hangman's Creek. And this particular one, I just want to talk about a little bit. The last time that I played it, and Court and I had played because Adrian got stuck at work. And that's what happens when you are a systems administrator for a very popular and prominent area hospital. And it also is what happens when you're on salary and they can call you in to work on stuff. Bear that in mind, people. Don't go salary. So I was playing with Court, and you know, we've been playing this for so long that like we don't really have a preference on what side we want to play as. But it was just the two of us. We weren't sure if anyone else would be showing up. Like I said, Adrian was not going to be able to, but there's another nice gentleman, John C. He puts together the Zombie Fight Night that happens twice a year at Battleground Games and Hobbies in Plainville now, actually. And we weren't sure if he was going to be playing or not because he said he was interested and he plays a lot of Flames of War, and we thought he might like to play some other historicals. So he said he might come down, and it turned out he wasn't able to. So that left Adrian, who could not come, and it left Court, who was there, which was good because it's all his stuff that we're using, and it left me. So Court and I said, you know, we don't really care who plays what side. let's roll for it. So Court ended up playing as the Confederates, and I played as the Union. This was my first time playing this scenario where it was just me on a side. I believe I have played the Union a few times, and the Rebels, I think I've only played as the Rebels once, actually. But I usually tend to be teamed up with someone else. We're usually lucky enough to have 2-on-2, which is great. The game can fit up to 3 people per side, which means you can have 6 people playing, 3 for the Union, 3 for the Rebels. And so we went at it, and we had the game set up like it is in the book. And Court looked at the table and reminded me that I got to go first by moving my pickets, but nothing else because the alarm had not been sounded. I repositioned my pickets to the foot of the hill and waited for the Rebels to come on. And Court had come up with an ingenious technique for this game, which I'm actually not going to tell you what he does, because if you're listening and you end up coming to the event, you might figure this out anyway, because I'm sure you guys are smart and you can figure out decent strategy for games. But he figured out a cool way to up his possibility of obtaining and holding one or more objectives. So he began to do that, and one of the big changes that we had made was we played this game using full distance rules. When we have been playtesting this scenario, we had been playtesting it with half distance rules, and we've done it for a few months at least. And the reason why we did it was because we're using a smaller scale, and at first we were playing on a single 4x6 table, which quickly expanded to 2 4x6 tables. So playing on an 8x6 surface was really cool, but we discovered that, you know, we didn't want the game to take forever for people to get into combat. And one of the cool things about Black Powder is you move very quickly across the board. So we thought, well, you know, maybe that'll be enough. But we found out that we wanted people to get into combat a little quicker, especially if it's going to be at a convention, which it is. So we tried out full distance rules, and I tell you, they made a world of difference. Because by turn 2, Court not only got almost all the way to the Union lines, but I had difficulty getting my troops onto the battlefield. And it was good because the Confederates in this scenario have a little bit of a difficult time because they are the attackers. The Union basically holding objectives. The Union has a delayed start, so to speak. They don't have everything on the table. So the Rebels do have that going for them, but they have to cross the table. They have to go and, you know, get objectives and hold them. So you have that happening, and the Rebels need to move quickly. They need to just cover ground and not stay put. And if you roll poorly on your command phase, you're just not getting the number of orders you would need to traverse the table and do what you have to. But with full distance, Court was able to get across very quickly. He came over, and he started causing trouble for me right away. And then the game, a lot of fighting going on. So we discovered that the full distance rules was a good thing. Also, we had toyed with the last time using the cornfields as terrain that blocks line of sight so that you can't really shoot through it. We did that because we wondered if maybe the Rebels might have a difficulty going across a big open plain. Well, we took that away, and we discovered with that and with the full distance rules that we didn't have to worry about the Rebels getting bogged down over, you know, the cornfields and coming across that as Union could just stand and shoot effectively and just decimate the Rebels. So with full distance, they can just zoom across and do what they have to and bring the fight to the Union. And that's how this is supposed to go. So Court made good use of that. I managed to deploy units eventually. And then we kind of traded shots. I ended up breaking one of his brigades. He broke one of mine. I broke another one of his. He annihilated one of mine. So by the end of the game, we became very well accustomed to broken brigades and the rules that impact them. And we also started to make good use of inhabiting buildings. In all of the previous games of Black Powder that I have played, nobody has ever gone into a building and used it as cover for their troops. It just hasn't happened, and I can't explain why, but it hasn't. So we never really thought about using buildings at all as a place for our troops to hide, which is probably a dumb thing if you think about it. It's a bad tactical thing. Oh, look, here's a nice place for a defensive emplacement for me to go inside and put some troops, but I'm just going to ignore it and stand in front. I mean, it wasn't really smart of me or anyone else. But a few games back, Court had been trying to think about it, and he's like, that might be cool. He's been the Rebels most of the time, so I can see why he would think that. But he hadn't done it until this game, actually. So we got well acquainted with the rules for being in buildings. And one of the cool things is he has these JR miniatures terrain. And he basically made bases for them so that they, the building sits in the middle of this base. And we construed the entire base as building for purposes of putting troops in. You know, like the yard or whatever for a house and whatever. Outbuildings might be there or a small farm or something. So we were able to use those, and they came in very handy with our broken brigades, because a brigade within a certain distance of an enemy, if the brigade is broken, its regiments have to basically fall back full moves away from the enemy, and they have to continue to do that unless they are out of whatever that distance is from the enemy, or unless they go into a piece of terrain like a building. So I managed to go into a building while I was within the distance of my enemy, the Rebels, and use that as a defensive emplacement. And Court did the same thing. So as the game had progressed, we slugged it out. Court took an objective that's never been taken before. He did so by completely annihilating one of my brigades. And I held on to one of the objectives that I thought he was going to take. It's the one that I think, and he thinks also, is the easiest to take for the Rebels, but I managed to hold on to it. So as the day closed at daybreak at Hangman's Creek, we saw that the Union had one fully intact brigade, the Rebels had one fully intact brigade, and then both the Rebels and the Union had broken brigades that were holding on and, you know, could do some damage if they needed to, but things were tight. We ruled that because the Rebels had taken one of the objectives, that it was a minor victory for the Rebels, because if the Rebels take any objectives, it's a victory per the scenario rules and the Black Powder rulebook. But Court had basically said that he thought, if we kept on playing the game, that he thought I could have won, that I may have pushed him out of the buildings that he was inhabiting throughout the board and pushed him out of the objective that he was holding on to. And that I would have just ended up going ahead and taking things and probably would have ended up winning. I don't know if he's right about that, but I told him I was okay with calling it because we had been playing for many hours and I didn't think the game was going to be changing much at all. But it was a lot of fun. I feel like we got a lot more stuff ironed out. And like I said, we got really used to the broken brigade rules. We got used to the rules for inhabiting buildings. We have decided we're going to use full distance movement and shooting and so forth in this game when we run it at the convention. The cornfields are not going to block line of sight. So these are all big things. And that led to the Rebels having what they call, in the rulebook actually, they call it a totem victory, and I'm not really sure what they mean by totem victory, but I'm sure they mean like minor victory or something of that sort, because if they were to get two objectives, they would get a partial or a medium victory, and three would be an outright victory. But Court got one objective, giving him a totem victory, and we had called the game a day. We had a lot of fun. There was a lot of carnage on the board. A couple things that I had noticed, and these are words of wisdom for, well, for everyone, but in particular for the Union. And if you will be playing this at all with your friends or at TotalCon or whatever, keep this in mind. The Union does not start with much on the table. It's important to remember what you have off the table that will be coming on, so that when you are rolling for your orders, you know that you have, like, X number of infantry regiments, or you have cavalry, or you have foot artillery, or whatever, that has to come on the board. I had forgotten to bring on an artillery piece from my 3rd Brigade, and several turns had gone by, and I finally realized, wait, I have an artillery piece I can bring on. And it came on, and it actually came on at a good point where I was able to do some amazing damage to the Rebels. But if I had brought it on earlier, maybe things would have been a little bit better. Maybe the 3rd Brigade would not have ended up becoming broken. I don't know. But I had forgotten that. And one other game, one of us had forgotten to bring on the Cavalry Regiment from the 1st Brigade. And there have been people have forgotten to bring on artillery pieces from the Rebels from different brigades and so forth. So just try to keep track of what you have off the table so that when you need to bring things on the table, you have everything accounted for. Now, maybe you just want to have the model situated in such a way so that you know you're going to start left to right or right to left or front to back or whatever and just grab things from a tray. Maybe you're going to have a list and you just check off on your list as things come on. Maybe you're going to have an actual, you know, order of battle and you can say you have a little system. Like a smiley face means that regiment came on or the brigade's on or, you know, check marks or plus signs or something. Just some way you can know that everything that's supposed to be on the table is on the table, because otherwise you might be handicapping yourself more than you really need or should. I handicapped myself and things worked out okay, I guess, but they could have gone a little bit better. So just keep that in mind, no matter what game you play, actually, that if you have reserves coming on or more reinforcements or whatever, that you are aware of what they are, what they're doing, when they should be coming on, and whether or not they are on the table. So that's a little word of wisdom for all of you. Now, I think this is a close to this episode. I want to just say, once again, a big thank you to everyone. I want to say congratulations again to Stephen and Lydia. I want to say welcome to baby Isabel. Remind all of you about checking out your local Barnes & Noble or other bookseller for WS&S. Don't forget to participate in the TotalCon contest. Please, please, please send your submissions to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com or head on over to wargamingforums.com. There's a whole blog article talking about the contest and what you need to do. Of course, the show notes for this episode will have links to that. We'll have links to the holiday gift guide and Daybreak and TotalCon and all sorts of stuff. So just keep all of that in mind. And as always, you know, we will be having future episodes coming for you as we maintain our bi-weekly schedule with roughly hour-long episodes. So thank you, everyone. And that's a wrap for this show. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew M. and Court N. for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.